Come on, throw in a buck.
Uh-uh, I don't tip.
You don't tip?
No, I don't believe in it. I don't tip because society says I have to. All right, I mean, I'll tip if somebody really deserves a tip. If they really put forth the effort, I'll give them something extra. But, I mean, it's tipping automatically. It's for the birds. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, they're just doing their job.
Hey, Robert Smith here. If you've been out and about in restaurants recently, you may have noticed that there are a few high-end restaurants who are doing something very unusual. They are doing away with the tradition of tipping. They're saying, listen, the price on the menu is the price. You pay that price, and we will pay our servers a living wage, and you don't have to worry about tipping. But it's not working out so well for some restaurants. In fact, a couple in California who went to this no-tipping policy have returned to tipping. To understand why this weird tradition is so resilient, we're going to rerun a show that I and Caitlin Kenny did a few years ago on the history of the tip and why it doesn't always work out the way everyone thinks it does. We've all been there, right? You're in a restaurant and you're about to leave some money on the table. Let's say your waiter hasn't exactly been the best server ever, and you're peeling out these bills, you're putting them down on the table, and you think, this is such a bizarre custom.
I mean, especially if you think about it from an economic standpoint, as we do here on Planet Money, there's all these questions that come to mind. Like, why do we tip waiters and waitresses, but we don't usually tip our car mechanic or the guy who comes to install our cable? I mean, these are people who work hard for a living, too, and they provide valuable services, but we just don't tip them.
And when you start to analyze it, you can't even say these tips guarantee great service. I mean, think about it. If that were true, why would you ever tip in a restaurant where you will never go there again? Why would you put money in a tip jar if the guy's back is turned and he doesn't see you put the money in there? It doesn't guarantee any sort of service.
And what about other countries that don't have a custom of tipping? People seem to get their food and drinks there. The social fabric doesn't fly apart.
And I should say here, before you think we're haters on waiters and waitresses, both Caitlin and I have spent years of our lives waiting tables.
I put in a solid five.
You know, still, Steve Buscemi starts to make a little bit of sense.
You know what this is? It's the world's smallest violin playing just for the waitresses.
You don't have any idea what you're talking about. This is a hard job.
So is working at McDonald's, but you don't feel the need to tip them, do you? Well, why not? They're serving you food. But no, society says, don't tip these guys over here, but tip these guys over here.
Today, we try to understand how we got in this tipping system in the first place. And really, does it do any good at all?
Let's take a moment to thank and share a message from our sponsor, Herman Miller. Herman Miller helps organizations of all sizes create great places to work, places that support your employees, your customers, and your business goals. And no matter what your budget, Herman Miller has programs and tools in place to make this kind of workplace accessible. Create an office that can grow with you and help your people do their best work. Learn more at HermanMiller.com/NPR.
To understand how we got this tradition of tipping waiters, we went to a former waiter.
Michael Lynn used to wait tables at Pizza Hut, also at a fancy French restaurant in Austin, Texas. He's now a professor of food and beverage management at Cornell, and he spent a lot of time studying tipping.
And Michael says to make sense of this, you actually have to go back to the very beginning, the dawn of tipping 500 years ago. And it turns out that at its start, tipping did make more economic sense. There were selfish reasons for giving a little bit of extra money to your servers.
Supposedly, tipping originated in the 16th century in coffee houses, where there were these boxes with iron pads around them, and patrons would publicly and visibly put coins in these boxes as an incentive then for the staff to give them prompt service.
So I'm in a crowded coffee house. I want my coffee. And I notice there's a lot of people in front of me. So I drop a few coins in this bowl and I get my latte first or whatever they were serving in the day.
That's the theory.
And this theory of the origin of tipping is the one that appeals to those of us, like myself, who like to think of humans as selfish creatures. I mean, tipping was essentially a bribe. It was a payment for extra service. I mean, it made sense. You were trying to get ahead of others. You're trying to cut the line, and it's worth every cent. If you're in a rush, you're going to pay that money up front, and you're going to get what you came for.
Of course, a lot of things have changed since then. We don't drop coins into metal buckets anymore. A lot of times now we put them inside a check presenter or maybe even a jar by a register. Also now we tip after the meal, after the service has been provided, typically.
And instead of just a few people, those in a hurry, giving these tips, now everybody does it. But we still cling to the idea that somehow the promise of 15% is going to ensure promptness.
Yeah, there's still this expectation that there's a direct link between good service and good tipping. But of course, Planet Money, we wanted to test it out. We put this call out on our Twitter feed and we said, hey, anybody who depends on tips for a living, tell us what it's like. Here's one of the people we heard from.
I'm Jessica Gibson and I'm a bartender in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
And here's the thing. We talked to servers like Jessica all around the country, and almost all of them believe totally in their hearts that good tips will get you good service, and good service will bring better tips.
You know, I do feel like the harder I work, the greater service I provide, you know, as a resource and as, you know, a personality, I do feel like for the most part, I'm compensated for that.
So you actually feel that the level of tip you get is within your control. If you do a good job, you will get a bigger tip.
To a degree. I mean, there are people that are going to have, you know, their preconceived notions of what they're going to tip. They know what they're going to tip, your percentage they're going to tip you when they walk in the door. But I think that that's the minority of people, at least in my experience.
Yeah. Professor Michael Lin has looked at this in his research, and he has bad news for Jessica.
In fact, if we look at the actual relationship between the customer's ratings of service and the amount they tip, there is a relationship. People do tip more when they get better service, just not a whole lot more. It's a pretty weak relationship. Other studies have found, for example, that the amount of sunshine outside and variations in sunshine have as big an impact on the tips that customers leave as the customer's ratings of service quality.
Because people are happier? It's a nice day?
Presumably, yes.
That is depressing to every server out there who's listening to this
especially
right now.
Especially in Seattle and Portland where it's raining all the time.
Exactly. That weak relationship certainly raises questions about whether tipping still provides an incentive.
You see, something happened in the 500 years since tipping began, and that's something called social pressure. I mean, it's not just the people who are in a hurry who are now tipping. It's everybody. And if everybody tips the same amount, 15%, 20%, if there's that social pressure, then there's really no incentive anymore for a server to treat one person differently than another, for a server to actually, I don't know, move faster, give better service.
So the customers aren't really rewarding good service. But against all the evidence out there, Michael Lin says most servers still think they do. They still believe if they give good service, they'll get a good tip in return.
The vast majority of servers believe that their tips are related to the quality of service they provide. And as long as they hold that belief, they're motivated then to provide good service in order to maximize their income. And it's easy to believe it because that's what the social norms, and that's what you always read about. Tips are supposed to be a reflection of service quality. And so it's easy to delude myself.
It's funny because even Jessica, our bartender, takes part in this little delusion. Jessica swore, she swore that tips are based on service, that she has control over this. But then again, when she goes out, she always tips well, regardless of service.
I would never tip less than 20%. I mean, you could vomit on my plate, and I would still tip you 20%.
Imagine if you don't vomit the kind of tip you're going to get. Michael Lin says that this bizarre situation, it is a bizarre situation, where customers tip generally the same amounts because it's expected, and yet servers believe there's some sort of reward in there for good service. This myth actually works in a weird way. He's done studies that show that when there's an automatic service charge on a cruise ship, let's say, instead of tipping, the perceived level of service does go down.
Okay, so what's going on here? Because we've ruled out the idea that we tip because it gets us better service. Now we know, not the case. So why are we doing it? We talked with Michael Lin about this, and he says there's this whole other way of looking at it. Instead of buying better service with your tip, maybe you're buying something else. You're buying your way out of guilt.
One of the theories introduced by an anthropologist named George Foster is that tipping originated in eating and drinking establishments as a way of forestalling the envy of the server. That if I'm at a bar drinking, the people working are in a much worse position than me. I'm having fun. They're doing menial work. And they're likely to envy my privileged status. And who knows what they might do, spit in my drink, whatever. So I want to forestall that envy. And the way I do it is I give them some money and I say, here's some money for you can have a drink on me at the end of your work hours. And his evidence to support this theory is that the word for tip in many different languages around the world, in Austria, Belgium, Bosnia, Croatia, the Czech Republic, Latvia, Norway, Sweden, even Vietnam, the word for tip translates to drink money.
And this theory also explains why we tip the people that we do. We tend to tip in places where we're having a lot more fun than the people serving us, like when we're in a bar, in a restaurant, on vacation, or on a cruise ship.
Yeah, but we don't tip in grocery stores.
Or even at the dry cleaners, because that just feels like more of a straightforward business transaction.
Yeah, so it used to make sense to tip because of these little bribe boxes 500 years ago. But now we do it because we want to relieve this guilt.
And of course, to avoid people spitting in our drinks.
So let's test out the guilt theory. We're going to go back to our Planet Money crew of servers from around the nation. This one?
My name's Corey Norris, and I live in Reno, Nevada. I'm a full-time bellhop, and I work the graveyard shift Monday through Friday.
Corey says that tipping will not get you better service at his hotel in Reno. He says doing it is just totally an emotional reaction.
If you're going to ask help for somebody to pull your luggage up to your room at 2, 3, 4 in the morning, are you really not going to tip the guy? I get the feeling, I really do get the feeling that people feel guilty asking for help at such a late hour.
And Corey plays off this. He says if people don't give him a tip, he's got this little trick he uses. He says if people don't tip him immediately when he brings the luggage up to the room, he asks for their claim check. You know, that's the little ticket that they give you when you check into the hotel. You leave your luggage downstairs, and they give you a little ticket. And he said he does this because people usually keep this little ticket in their pocket or in their wallet, generally where their money is. So it's very awkward for them to pull this ticket out and not hand them a couple bucks while they're doing it. And most of the time, he says, this trick works. People end up giving him a dollar or two.
But as you can see, this whole emotional theory of tipping sets up some perverse incentives for people to make a living by tips. There's this economic motivation for waiters or waitresses or bellhops to buddy up to you, to create an emotional connection so that you'll actually feel a little more guilty about stiffing them.
But just be clear, we're not saying this is like emotional blackmail or anything. I mean, sometimes it's fun to be manipulated like this. We headed down to a bar and restaurant in the Lower East Side called Vare Lane to test this out.
And it's this slick joint. There's a DJ booth above the door. There's low lighting. There's specialist lychee martinis.
Hey, guys, how we doing? Do you guys know about our happy hour?
No, what do you got?
Keith Groff works the bar here like he's just hanging out, having a great time. And all of his customers, they're just along for the party.
I feel very confident in just being able to produce a environment, like a show almost, and people are tipping me on their experience.
Look, he basically says, you aren't paying just for the drink. You're paying to feel like you're included here, that you're among friends. You're having a good time. It's a party. What's a tip?
Another waitress here, Victoria Benzinger, also plays along. She shows off a little skin and she flirts.
I think you want them to feel like they maybe could have a chance with you, but really that's just like the facade. It's not real. Do you know what I mean?
It's part of the hustle.
For sure.
And just in case the whole buddy-buddy routine doesn't work, the whole, hey, everybody knows your name, you're a friend here, just in case that doesn't work, Keith has a little trick. If someone at the bar orders a drink and he doesn't tip, Keith won't spit in their drink or anything, but he will start to lavish attention on the people to the right and to the left of the cheapskate. Free drinks, jokes. He will show you what you're missing. I mean, he'll show you the value of a tip.
And Keith says when he does this, it usually works. He often gets an apology, and the deadbeat ends up leaving tips for the rest of the night. So it's a great deal for Keith. But you have to think about the cheapskate here. And I have to say, as a former waitress, it's really hard for me to sympathize with the guy who doesn't tip, or girl. But think about it from their perspective. They're in a really hard spot. Michael Lynn thinks about this a lot when he's researching tipping. And he says after a lifetime of studying it, he still isn't so sure that this system works for everyone.
I think it's quite possible that tipping norms undermine overall satisfaction or happiness. The social pressures people feel to give up money they would rather keep, that loss, I mean, for them, tipping is a net loss. And it's very possible that that net loss exceeds the benefits.
And if it's a net loss, it's a big one. It's estimated that we give about $40 billion worth of tips a year in the United States. I mean, think about that, $40 billion, so that we can feel like our servers like us, so we can go on living in the illusion that everyone's happy and generous.
Now, the $40 billion is great for the service industry. That's how they make their living. That's how they pay their bills. But do think about the cost. I mean, every time you felt anxiety because you got lousy service, but you were too afraid to give anything less than 20%, think about that anxiety. I mean, think about the moments that you paused, terrified that you did the math wrong and you ended up stiffing some poor person you meant to give a good tip to.
Or all those moments where you're wondering whether you tipped the concierge who made reservations for you, or the girl who shampooed your hair before the hairdresser cut it. Or the deli guy who makes your sandwich.
Yeah, I think you tipped the shampooer, but not the deli guy.
See,
I have no idea. See, that's the thing about tipping, is that because it's based on custom, because it's based on emotion, because it's 500 years of all these intricate rules, I got to admit, at the end of our podcast, it's never going to make sense completely. There's no logic to a lot of this. But the big question is, how do you undo it? How do you undo 500 years worth of custom and expectation? How do you unravel it? I mean, no one wants to be the first guy, and economists do recommend this, but nobody wants to be that first guy who starts stiffing all the waiters because they feel like tipping's illogical.
And there have been cases of restaurants who've tried to do away with it. We read this article in the New York Times about a place out on the West Coast, and they talked about how their customers were really confused, and they had a really hard time explaining, oh, no, 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 you don't have to tip.
And, you know, I talked to all these servers, and the one question I always wanted to ask them was, listen, if we could guarantee for you, if we could guarantee you would make the same amount of money, let's just say the restaurant slapped on a service charge, paid you that money, you could make a steady amount of money, you would know exactly what you're making. In that case, would it be better for you to do away with tipping? And even then, the waiters or waitresses said, no. I mean, even though they roll the dice every night on your generosity, even though they get stiffed, waiters and waitresses say they can't figure out a better system. They like it. They like the excitement. And, you know, for every bad tip, there's a good one around the corner.
We want to thank everyone who responded to our Twitter call out about tipping. We got tons of responses and emails, and we're so sorry we couldn't talk to all of you. But we're, of course, still anxious to hear what you think about tipping, how you think it should work, and what you thought of today's show. Please email us, planetmoney@npr.org.
And you can find us on Facebook and Twitter and on our blog, npr.org/money. I'm Robert Smith.
And I'm Caitlin Kenney. Have a great night.
Tip your waitresses.